The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the big show, Your Money with David Hayes. Thanks for hanging out with me. I've got a lot of stuff to get through in a little bit of time, and Rod Holloway will be joining me in just a few minutes to talk about the markets and the economy. Later on, I'm going to discuss, should you own bonds? I mean, the popular media sure says you shouldn't, but we're going to give you a counter argument to that. And then later on, we're going to discuss, I had an idea from a listener that said, hey, how do you pick a financial advisor? Now, I'm going to go through just some common things that you should look for and the questions you should ask in evaluating and picking a financial advisor. As 10,000 people a day in America are turning 65, 10,000 a day are turning 70, a lot of people are looking for financial advisors at these hinge points points of their life where they think, hey, I need some help. I need some advice. Before we get to all of that, let's do a little news of the week brought to you by the Monroe County Sports Hall of Fame. Of course, their inductees were announced a couple weeks ago. You can learn more about the Monroe County Sports Hall of Fame. Go to mcshof.com or simply Google Monroe County Sports Hall of Fame. And it's, of course, supported by us at Comprehensive Financial Consultants. Mortgage rates are up. The 30-year fixed rate mortgage, according to Freddie Mac, is 4.38%. Now, that is because the 10-year treasury's gone up. So watch the 10-year treasury. If it goes up, your mortgage rates go up. I did a little calculation. I thought, well, what does that really mean? So if you had a $200,000 mortgage and your rate was 3.85%, which what it was maybe, a few months ago, your payment would be $938 a month. That's just the principal and interest. At 4.38%, it's $1,000 a month. So it's basically about $62 more per month. I don't think that's going to discourage people from buying a home, which is, by the way, the headline, housing's going to have a tough year because of interest rates. Folks, ask people that bought homes in 1982 and see what their rate was. You buy a home because you want a home, not because the interest rates are high or low. It's just the way it goes. All right, a couple other things. You know, a lot of folks like to chase that top performing stock. Well, the number one performing stock in the S&P during 2017 was actually ranked 491st during January of 18, and there's only 500 stocks in the exchange, so that means it was down at the bottom. After gaining over 132% in 2017, it was down a lot in 2018. Now, you might say, what stock was that? If I told you, I'd have to kill you. It's not compliant. I'm not allowed to tell you. All right, fiscal year 2019 budget has been released by the White House on Monday. They're calling for $3.422 trillion of tax revenue, but $4.407 trillion of outlays, resulting in a deficit of $984 billion, that's with a B, billion dollars. Our country's actual deficit for the recently completed 2017 fiscal year was $665 billion. This comes from the Office of Personnel. It comes from the Office of Management and Budget. The White House also released on Monday the 10-year projection for our nation's outstanding debt. Our national debt is currently just below $21 trillion. It's forecasted to reach $29.97 trillion by the year 2028. Our national debt was $10 trillion in 2008. This comes from the White House. So, what I've been telling you for quite some time is, listen, 76 cents of every dollar that comes into the coffers pays for four things: Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and interest on our debt. And they have projected that if nothing changes by the year 2030, that it would be 94 cents. David Walker, former comptroller of the United States government, practically the CPA of America, said that taxes would have to double for us to simply pay for the things we've already promised. So as I've been preaching here on the radio for the last, for the last year, that when taxes are at these historically low numbers, percentages, you need to take action. So for this next 7 years, if you're not moving money from taxable to tax-free in preparation for higher taxes down the road, then you're simply either not listening or you're very, very bad at math. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, Hot Rod Holloway will be joining us. We've got some market talk to go over with him. I'm just going to look for my notes here real quick. Of course, a lot of key economic findings in the past week and a half. January highlights, we'll go over theirs. February highlights, we'll go over that as well as we approach the very end of February. In fact, this is the last show in February. And then next week, we're going to have a guy on the show called Pete the Planner. Pete's all about employer-based financial wellness and education, which is also something I'm very passionate about. So we have some synergies there. We'll be talking with him next week. So really excited about that. But we'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll have Hot Rod Holloway. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. Had something funny happen this week. Someone emailed me about how I've been talking about the Olympics and how the silver medal winner is always upset and the happiest people on the podium are the gold and the bronze. I'll have a little bit more about that during the next segment. But right now we have Mr. Rod Holloway. And Rod, you know, if you think about the wild volatility that we had in January, markets rebounded pretty well last week, posting sizable gains and moving back into positive territory for the year. All three major indices saw their largest weekly gain in years, of course, despite losing a little ground last Friday on the news of additional indictments, by the way, that no one will ever be arrested in the Russian investigation. But then by the market's close on the 16th, the S&P had added 4+%. The Dow is over 4, and NASDAQ even more than that. But this performance, as we've said, has not come with a simple, straightforward increase. Instead, the volatility from these recent weeks, it continued. In fact, the S&P at one point lost or gained at least 1% on 8 of the past trading days. And you and I were talking earlier today that you saw a statistic that has gone up or down 1% more times this year than all of 2017 combined?
Yeah, exactly right. You know, and part of what's going on here is it's a reversion to the mean. We've gone through a period in which volatility was so low, we're just now slowly working our way back to what the market used to look like on a regular basis. Now, of course, we've had some individual days in which the volatility spiked and was much higher than what you may have as far as a historical average. I think we jumped as high on a couple of those big days in which we were having 1,000-point swings. I think the volatility index, the VIX, had jumped up to about 50 at that point. You know, it really hovered around the high 20s to the 30s in that first week and a half of the sell-off. It's now settled back down to where it's hovering right around the 20 mark. Mm-hmm. Today actually closing a little bit below that. You know, but that historic VIX really has run around that, you know, 16 to 18, 19 mark, depending on the time horizon that you're looking at for that. We've gotten all the way down to where we were just sitting at around 10.
Right.
And we basically sat right around that 10 mark, give or take a couple of points, for pretty much all of 2017. So, unfortunately, part of a reversion to a mean for anything like that means sometimes you're going to have outsized moves to slowly bring that average back up to where it belongs. But I think really moving forward where we're at, we're getting back to a more normalized market as you start to eliminate and remove the outside influences from the market of quantitative easing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you really, you know, if you also look at just some of the economic data that we saw last week, the readings help deepen our understanding of what's happening in the economy. Some mixed results, but for the most part, it indicated the economy is on solid ground. So like you said many times over the last couple of weeks, nothing has changed. I mean, we still have consumer price index up, which is good. It's a neat, nice solid number there. Retail sales fell a little bit, but that wasn't anything major. And then you look at consumers. I mean, consumers are feeling great. I mean, the index that tracks that came in at its second highest reading in 14 years. And that just means that people are feeling good. I had my car worked on this week, and the mechanic, the body shop guy, said, man, things are rocking. Things are awesome. And he wasn't talking about the market. He was just talking about his business. And, you know, when that guy is excited and about what's going on, he may feel a little more apt to go to the store and spend some money on some things that maybe he wouldn't have spent money on before. And as the consumer spends, that drives the economy. So looking ahead, I mean, volatility probably here to stay, should be here to stay. It's a, that makes for a healthy market. Keep it on your radar. People get caught between conflicting concerns about, you know, missing out on the bull market or losing money while staying in the markets. But as Rod said, as I've said, remember, stock fluctuations are normal. This was a little abnormal, you know, but like Rod said, now we're getting back into the more normal volatility ranges. We're just trying to help you understand what's happening and how to position yourself as you go forward. So, Rod, real quick, we're going to talk about how to compartmentalize your investments. And you and I were in a couple of meetings today, how we talked about, you know, having the money that's in the market positioned in a way that you don't have to touch that money for a really long time. Because when you look at the market, the number one thing you need is time. It's not about timing, it's about time, whether that's 10 years or 15 years. So if money that you need tomorrow is in the market, probably a bad idea. Money that you need next year in the market, probably a bad idea. So walk people through just a little explanation of how you can compartmentalize your investments, and I think then have a little more comfort in how and why and when this volatility occurs, and you know why, and then you can understand why it does, but you don't hit the panic button and run for the hills.
Yeah, exactly. And obviously, those shorter term buckets, that now money, that soon money, typically is best suited for fixed income. Now, of course, you hear in the media everybody talking about, oh, fixed income's not the place to be right now, but you have to understand most of that's coming from traders. So they're trying to make money today. They're trying to make money tomorrow. They're trying to make money for the next week. It's not a long-term plan that they're building for their retirement on down the road. So, no, I wouldn't be buying bonds for appreciation today, but bonds have a maturity date on them. So, hey, if I know I need money in 2 years, mm-hmm. and I want to earn a little bit more than the bank savings account, well, guess what? I can go out and buy a 2-year bond and know that when I need that money, that bond matures, I know what they're giving me back, and I collect a little bit of interest off of that. That now money, obviously that needs to be more cash and cash equivalent.
Right.
You know, that is savings accounts, that is money market accounts, that's potentially extremely short CDs that you would do in that type of a thing. You could potentially throw it into a short duration bond fund, and those are nice tools, but the only downside to that tool is there isn't a set maturity date, so there is still some fluctuation in that, but being that the bonds inside there are fairly short in their maturity, it's not a large amount of fluctuation. Then you get to that next bucket, that soon bucket. Hey, I don't need it for the next couple of years, but gosh, I'm probably going to need that bucket over the next 3 to 10 years. You know, that's then when you start building that laddered bond portfolio that runs from 3 to 10 years, and every year you got a chunk of bonds that are maturing and rolling into cash and are there available to be used for whatever it is. If it be retirement and retirement income, great, start spitting that income out. If it was for a purchase of something, hey, when we retire, we want to buy a vacation home, then you've got that comes due. And then, of course, that long-term bucket, that's where you put your more risky assets, your growth assets, the stocks that you would be buying, the stock funds. You put that in there, and you don't want to touch that or plan to touch that for 10, 15, 20 years. And even in the beginning phases of starting to touch that, it's not like you're diving in and grabbing it all. What you're really doing is you're just taking some of those gains off the table of allowing that bucket to grow for 10, 15 years and start stripping those profits off and moving them back and replenishing the now bucket, replenishing that soon bucket, that laddered bond portfolio. And then once again, still going to have dollars left in that long-term bucket for it to continue to grow for that next phase of when you hit that long-term mark and it's time to go back and replenish those other two buckets.
You didn't even see the outline of the show, Hot Rod, and I was talking about, in the next segment, why to own bonds. So that was a very good explanation, which then destroys my next section, so I'm going to have to completely make something up for the next go-around. Hey, I forgot I was going to ask you one other quick thing. How did the markets end up today? I know when I talked to you earlier, the markets were rocketing up pretty quickly, but I didn't see how we finished up the day.
Yeah, we had gotten up over 300 points on the Dow. We did give a good amount of that back. We finished up 164 points on the Dow. You know, the S&P was only up a little over 2 on that. So, yeah, we gave that back. But that's what you should expect moving forward, because you still have a tug on the market, short-term tug, mm-hmm. in which the market is still grappling with what the interest rate environment is telling us, what some of the new inflation data is telling us. But the reality is we're not on the cusp of a 10-year setting at around 290, getting ready to be 4.5.
Right.
You know, we aren't going to move that quick into interest rates. We had some comments out of some Fed governors that even said, hey, look, you know, we have to be cautious, and we don't see any reason to move any faster than what we've said unless the economic data comes in way, way stronger than what we anticipate right now. So I think short term, the market got a little bit caught up in the interest moving a little faster than anticipated, inflation looking a little hotter than anticipated, gave some fear that maybe the Fed would take more aggressive action. But I think as calmer heads step back and take a look and you go, hey, you know what? Yeah, interest rates moved kind of quick in a short amount of time, but they seem to be topping out right now near term. And the reality is having a 10-year under 3% is still an extremely low interest rate for the historical average of the 10-year.
Hot Rod, we appreciate what you do. Thanks for being on the air with us, and we're going to take a break. We'll be right back. I'll see you in the morning, Rod.
Sounds good, Dave. Have a great show.
All right, we'll be back, guys. This is Your Money with David Hayes. So, you know, you've heard me say, what, the last couple of weeks I've been watching the Olympics at night. I feel like I see the same stuff over and over, although I have been picking up curling, whatever the purpose of that is. It looks like a shuffleboard kind of game, which is fine, whatever. They were going to take wrestling out of the Olympics, but curling's still in. I don't know. I don't get it. Anyway, watching the podium finishers, seeing that the gold medal winner is so stinking happy, right? And the second most happy person is the bronze, because they crawled onto that podium, and how the silver medal winner is typically the least happy because they just missed out. Well, I had a email come through, Gary, thank you for this, that said the reason the silver medal winner is so upset because they're the first loser. The bronze winner says, I made it, I'm a winner. The gold winner says, I am the winner. But the silver says, I'm the first loser. Gary had a couple of daughters that participated in athletics, and he knows what it's like to be the first loser, and it's no fun. All right. And I watched the speed skating the other evening, the female speed skating. I may have mentioned that already, but, man, was that lady pretty upset who did not get the gold. And the Japanese girl that won, she was hugging her and consoling her. And oh, it was from Korea, I think. But anyway, I may have said that last week. I forget. I get all my Olympics mixed up, and I get my shows mixed up. All right, Rod had already teed this up for me, but we talked about why you own bonds. And as Rod mentioned, from a total return perspective, if you don't need income, if you don't need the money to automatically mature next year and the next year and the next year to create cash flow for income needs, then there are alternatives to owning bonds. Now, most of what you've owned bonds for, if you don't need income, if you don't need it for, you know, future income or current income, you owned it for a diversifier, a different asset class to help stabilize the portfolio. So if you had a 50-50 mix last year of stocks and bonds, you probably made between 8 and 10%, maybe a little more if you're lucky. And most weren't very pleased with that because they looked at the market and thought, I should have made 20. Well, if you had any bonds at all, you didn't. Bonds were pretty much flat for the year for the most part. So you didn't make any money there. You made maybe 20 on the other side, average 10. So if you received those types of returns and you're upset, look at your allocation. That will tell you if you got what you deserved, which is fine. I mean, that's why you own bonds. Everyone wants the upside. But there are other investment products that can be used as a bond-like alternative that I wanted to go through. And this is, again, if you don't need steady, reliable interest, but you just want to have that asset class that will give you the chance to make some decent money, but will give you the stability in the portfolio that you're needing. So you really should look at some of these newer fixed indexed annuities and some of the crediting methods that are available. Now, let me just go through what a fixed indexed annuity is one more time. I put my money in. After a year, if the market goes up, then I'll receive an interest credit that year based on some percentage of participation in the market. It's all over the place. If the market goes down, depending on the type of fixed indexed annuity you own, it's likely that you lose no money and you start all over again. So let's say that you had a 60% or a 50% participation in the market, and the market went up 10%, then that year you would receive 5% interest, 50% of 10. Make sense? That's the way a true fixed indexed annuity works. Now, there's other types of fixed indexed annuities, ones that will give you some downside protection, but not 100% downside. Maybe they'll protect 10% of the losses in a year, or 15% or 25%. I was looking at one of the products that we use that will give you up to 8.5% gain on the S&P 500, but with 10% downside protection. So again, the market goes up 10, you get 8.5. If it goes down 10, you lose 0. If it goes down 12, you lose 2. So that's the way that some of these products are developed. Now, that's an interest credit. It's not a it's not a growth play. It's a bond alternative. The other thing that it could do is if the market's either flat or up at all, then it will just give you a fixed interest rate. So I saw one that will give you a 6.5% interest rate if the market's flat or just up a little bit. So we say that's what's your flat market or sideways market plan, or what's that option. So these are things that are available out there that could potentially make good soon buckets. If you don't need to know exactly what you're going to get out of it, you can lock in gains each and every year. Most of them have no fees associated with them. They're like, what Doug Hughes always says is fixed annuities, whether they're fixed index or traditional fixed, are what CDs are to banks. It's a way for them to raise capital. Certainly, they have ways to make money on these; otherwise, they wouldn't offer them. But they're a good option for you. Now, most of them, actually all of them, have surrender periods that can be as short as maybe 5 or 6 years, all the way up to 10 plus. So be aware of that. That's a liquidity trap. So if you need money out of these, it's probably not the best place to put it. But again, there's a place for these products. And I've been using them for years. Doug has been using it. People in my office have been using them for years. As long as you understand what they'll do, what their purpose is, then I think they can be a decent fit. So if you're interested in learning more about these, shoot us an email and we can have a conversation about whether or not it makes some sense to put some downside protection or some opportunity over on that bond side. So it could be a place for someone's fixed income. It's certainly not an equity alternative, but there are some of these new crediting methods that's been introduced over the last couple of years that I'll tell you are pretty strong. I mean, like an S&P 500 low volatility index. You can look that one up. Or the JP Morgan Mosaic Index. There's others out there too. But if you look at the returns on these, I mean, the S&P 5% low vol last year, if you credited it in October, made about 15% on a fixed index annuity. I've never seen that before. So back in the day, I would say to people, 0 to 6 is what I would expect to make on my fixed index annuities. Now, I mean, that could have been an anomaly. It probably was. But now I'm saying, you could make more than that. But I don't know. I mean, if you just look at 0 to 6 and you hit a 15 1 year, man, you'd be happy. But yeah, so there are a lot of options out there. But again, it's easier to get into things than out of things. So just be cautious and aware and make sure that you ask the right questions before you jump in. Hey, real quick, before we take another break, we have, you're going to start hearing some commercials on this, but we are going to begin doing some Medicare and Social Security educational workshops over at the Legacy on South College. And, you know, Social Security makes up nearly 35% of the average American's retirement income. So when are you eligible? When should you take it? What are the strategies still available to maximize what I'll receive? What about the solvency of Social Security? Should you be concerned about that? Of course, and then there's Medicare. You know, what does it cover? What are the different parts? What does it cost? Do I buy a traditional supplement or is a Medicare Advantage? the way to go. What about drug plans, dental and vision? So don't worry, we're here to the rescue. We're going to begin doing these free educational events over at the Legacy on South College. If you'd like to register, all you have to do is go to cfci.us. It's under the event tab. If you click the event tab, you'll see a lot of the workshops that we have coming up. I think right now that Medicare and Social Security could be the only event that's available to register for. I think we may have other things on there, like our Shred Day coming up in April. But don't hold me to that. I haven't actually checked it. But I've been told that there's other events up there. So be educated before you make the important decisions surrounding Social Security and Medicare. Once you make the decisions, it's usually irreversible. So you want to be educated. So again, if you'd like to attend this very first one coming up on April 3rd, it's at Legacy on South College, go to cfci.us. That's cfci.us under the event tab and register. You'll be glad you did. All right, we are going to take another break. When we come back, I'm going to discuss a couple things. We're going to discuss about where does your retirement income go, and also retirement goals that can be organized into three basic categories. And then I'm going to feather that into how to pick a financial advisor. Many or most don't engage someone until they're close to what I call a triggering event. Maybe it's retirement, a job change, required minimum distribution, something that causes them to engage with a financial advisor. Had a young couple in this week. They lost their dad, and this was their first opportunity to be in front of a financial advisor. They were in their young 40s and had a little bit of inheritance, some 401ks, and quite honestly, we're very excited about sitting down, focusing, putting a goal-based plan together. What should you be paying a financial advisor? That's something else that we'll talk about, especially if you don't have a lot of money, which they're managing, and that's how they're getting paid to help provide all these other services as well. So when we come back, we'll get through all of that and hopefully still have time for our last segment when I want to talk about good reasons to retire later, not earlier. All right, we'll be right back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Man, that makes me feel good. That music right there reminds me of being on the beach in Destin, Florida in June, or on a Caribbean island somewhere, enjoying crystal blue, turquoise green water, whatever you want to say, and enjoying a nice cold drink of some type, whichever one you prefer. And that will be me in about 3 weeks, because spring break will be upon us, and I will be on a cruise ship with my family and with some friends and their kids, and we'll be stopping at a variety of ports of call and getting off and enjoying that. So that little song, that little intro music, that bump music, whatever you want to call it, got me juiced up, fired up, ready to go for spring break. It'll be here before you know it. And then, heck, summer will be here before you know it. So get by these winter blues. You've got to look forward to something. In fact, I'll tell you something. I used to get so upset at my dad for not remembering things. And I would say, "Dad, don't you remember when we went down there and did this or did that?" And he would say, "No, I just don't remember that." Well, then, as I got older, it's happening to me. My wife, my son, a friend might say, "Do you remember when we did this or did that?" And I say, "Yeah, you know, I just don't remember." In fact, I've been to so many really cool places in my life that when someone says, "Hey, have you ever been to," I'm going to make this up, "Aruba," I have to look at my wife and say, "Hey, have we ever been to Aruba?" "Well, yeah, we went there whenever, da-da-da-da." I said, "Okay, yeah, I guess I've been there," which is embarrassing. But here's what I was told by a dear client of mine, now retired IU professor that was in like sociology or something where they figured out how people think and believe and I don't know, whatever. So she said to me, "David, you have to have three parts to an experience for it to be memorable. You have to have the anticipation, which is the planning, the getting excited, the talking about what you're going to do, all of the anticipation of going. And you need a little time for that. And you need to be consistent with it. And then when you leave, you need to have a great experience. You need to have a good time, and you need to enjoy all the things that you planned for and maybe some of the things you didn't plan for. And then when you get back, you must have the reminiscing. You have to talk about it, laugh about it, look at pictures, and continue to reminisce about that trip." or whatever it is that you did, whatever family experience, whatever it might be, anticipation, the experience itself, and then the reminiscing. Well, I have made an asserted effort to do that, to anticipate by, we're doing a Jeep rental in Cozumel. I think it's Cozumel. We are doing a Stingray adventure somewhere else. I don't even know what that is. So I have all this, I've been thinking about, talking about, looking, I actually Googled the room we're going to be staying in, which if you didn't know, you can do that. And it gave me a 360 view of the room. And I'm like, this, so I'm anticipating this, and then the Jimmy Buffett song comes on and gets me off track and fired up. Then we're going to have a great trip. I know that. But when I come back, I will absolutely talk about the ports of call. I'll talk about the fun times we had, the great dinners, just everything, the relationships we built. And this is going to be a memorable trip. Now, I have done this for the last year or two, and I think it's working. So my advice to you, if you're one of these people that just, you know, because here's the way it used to be. You know, I'm always just busier than... I'm probably not going to say a very politically correct thing, so I won't say it at all. I'm just busy, right? Very busy. I love what I do. And all of a sudden, it's like, hurry up and pack and hurry up and leave. And then hurry up and have fun and hurry up and get home. And that's the way my life's been for maybe the last 20 years. So I've really tried to mentally slow down to appreciate the anticipation, the experience itself, and then also the reminiscing. So you could think about, you know, retirement in your life the same way. You know, you anticipate retirement by, you know, saving and looking forward to the things you're going to do and planning. And then you have the experience of retirement. And then the reminiscing may be that you just reminisced about a great retirement, all the great things you did. But really, to me, it might be once you're gone, how do people remember you? What's your legacy? You know, what is it that people are going to remember about you, laugh about you, you know, about things that you did? So you can really, I think, take what I said about a memorable experience and trip and relate it to your own life as well. Now, boy, I'm looking at my time thinking, uh-oh. Okay, so let's talk briefly about things that a person has kind of goals or organized in retirement. They really break down into three categories. Your needs, that's your essential expenses like your mortgage, your insurance, what taxes, food, you know, what you wear, healthcare. Then you have your wants, the extras that you've worked hard for, like travel, entertainment, you know, maybe a country club membership, whatever. And then your wishes, like the legacy you hope to leave for different people or causes that you care about, future you know, generational things that you might want to do. And then I also thought it was interesting to just have a quick discussion about where your retirement money goes. And because a lot of times, you know, you don't really know how much you're going to need, first of all. And then after you figure that out, it's like, all right, where's it going to go? Well, according to a report I just saw from Raymond James, actually, it says that 34.8% of your money in retirement goes to housing. Housing and related major costs have the impact on your retirement budget, so that's the biggest one. Second biggest is just kind of the catch-all, the other category, and that's like, you know, transportation, education, clothing, gifts, that's a big one. We need to put a campaign together for people in retirement. I mean, you want to be generous and you want to do things for people, but you want to have that old Nancy Reagan saying, just say no, because sometimes the kids or grandkids will milk you to death. But evidently, that's the second largest expense in retirement. And then you get into things like, you know, transportation and then healthcare was 12.9%. That's your premium, prescriptions, medical supplies. Food, 12.3% of your retirement income goes to food. Now, you can control that based on the times you eat out or don't eat out. And only 5.5% on entertainment, which I thought that was pretty interesting. And they actually categorized your pets as entertainment. My pets are entertaining, I'll have to admit. They do funny things sometimes. They bark every time the Schwann man comes or that I come. I can leave my house. I can literally go out of the front door to get in my car, to drive it into the garage and come in, and the dogs bark like they haven't seen me in months. There's something wrong with my dogs, I guess. But anyway, all right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, I'm going to dig into how to pick a financial advisor. Again, many, many, many people do not gauge someone until they have a triggering event. Again, retirement, job change, RMD, maybe they inherited some money like the couple that I saw this week. So let's talk about that when we come back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. All right, welcome back, everyone. You know, I don't know how you pick someone to work with. I don't know how you pick your attorney. I don't know how you pick your CPA. I don't know how you pick your doctor. But I will tell you that a study recently released said that 45% of people surveyed felt that they were primarily responsible for their own health, while 44% of the respondents believe it's their physician's primary responsibility for their health. Now, I'm pretty sure that I just read the personal responsibility obituary. I mean, how could your health be someone else's responsibility unless you're just in a dire state? You know, if you have terrible cancer, you have a chronic or critical illness, yeah, your hands are in that healthcare provider. But you need to, I mean, I know that eating and, you know, right, and exercising only gets you so far. But you have to take some personal responsibility for your own health. And finances are the exact same way. So I don't know how many people think that, you know, it's the responsibility of the government or their employer to take care of retirement, but it's really your own responsibility. And many times when it comes to that realization, you seek out some financial help, a financial advisor. I will tell you that obviously, you know, they got to be licensed and they got to be credible and all that kind of stuff. But when it comes to working with a financial advisor, it's a little bit like choosing a therapist sometimes. I mean, you need to work with someone, first of all, you like, you trust their recommendations, you have confidence in them. But how do you get that? I mean, are they coming up with creative ideas like a backdoor Roth IRA like we did this week for someone, or helping a person that is well in retirement give money directly from their IRAs so they don't have to pay taxes and it satisfies minimum distributions? What about tax bracket planning so that they can get themselves out of the crosshairs of higher taxes down the road, or estate planning, or making sure that beneficiaries are lined up correctly so that when you die, your kids aren't killed with taxes and they can stretch that out over their lifetime? Or what about good retirement distribution plan that you understand and can explain to other people of how it works? That's important to me, how you can reduce the sequence of return risk. But at the end of the day, it's really important for you to take your responsibility for your own financial health. I mean, you can have guidance and you can have recommendations, but you need to be engaged. I will say that over the years, I have people that will say, "You're in charge of this, David. Here it is." And they really don't worry about it. Now, that worries me, because if something comes up out of the blue or maybe a surprise to them that shouldn't have been a surprise, then they might get upset. Well, I didn't know that was – I didn't know I was going to run out of money. Or I didn't know that I had that much risk when the market went. I didn't know that. Well, that's because they haven't been engaged or taking responsibility or paying attention. So it's really important that you do that. And that's why next week when we have Pete the Planner on the show, I think that's going to be great. It'll give people some motivation to take some personal interest in their financial well-being and health, and then also what's the responsibility of the employer and how can a more paternalistic or maternalistic employer help by creating a financial wellness program or showing an interest in their employees. Because I'm telling you that if you have an employee that doesn't have the stresses of the finances on their shoulders, they're a more productive employee. But going back to the financial advisor, I would say that first, what are you looking for? Are you looking for someone who is just a good investment person? Well, there's a lot, you know, pretty much we're all dealing with the same paint, right? And I'm not so sure that you're going to get a whole lot of, you know, alpha out of one person's ideas versus another. We typically all end up about the same point. What are you looking for? Are you looking for a distribution specialist? Are you looking for someone that does all the things I mentioned before? And then, you know, how do you actually find this person? But again, going back, how do you find the person that does other services for you? You know, that's the real question. My wife would ask on Facebook, "Hey, what should we do, or where should we go while we're in Cozumel?" Well, her friends on Facebook are her peers, and she looks at the recommendations and she says, "Great, that's what we'll do." I think that's a fantastic way to select a financial, at least to start the conversation with one. "I like you. I understand you're a smart person. You make good calls. You have good judgment. Who do you use? What have they done? Can they, you know, do you think they would talk to me?" Right now, we have what's called a goals-based monitoring system, which is really cool for people that are probably 5+ years out from retirement. where you can put in everything that you have going on now. You can put on all the goals you've got, and I'm talking everything. And then this system will help just sort of keep you on track in a review process every year. $500 to get you started, $250 every time it gets reviewed. And I'll tell you, the response has been fabulous. People love it, that it really lays it out to say, yeah, I am on track, or hey, maybe I'm not. Maybe I need to make a few adjustments here or there. So it's really good, and I would encourage people to do something like that. I think some of these online financial planning programs aren't that great because they don't take into consideration everything, and they're not easy to change. So if you said, okay, what if I did work another year? Okay, what if I did save another $50 of pay? Okay, what if I did try pay off my mortgage early? You know, all these different what-if scenarios can be plugged into this goals-based monitoring system. For me, $500, are you kidding me? That's a steal. It's not even covering our costs because the person we hired to run this thing is costing us more than that. But I'm telling you, I'm very, very committed to helping people get to where they need to get to. So $500 will get you started, $250 a year, and it'll get you going on your way. So again, how do you pick a financial advisor? I think at the end of the day, you got to go with your gut, and you got to go with peer recommendations and fees. I just mentioned how planning fees work, investment fees. Most people, you know, charge around 1% fee to manage your accounts. So it's just sort of the way it goes. And depending on the type of investments, you may have some other fees related to your accounts. I don't know. It depends on whether you have funds or individual securities. But, you know, those are the things that, cost is only an issue in the absence of value. So whether you shouldn't pick out a financial advisor because they're 20 basis points cheaper, that has nothing to do with it. So I would tell you that find the right person for you that you can work with, that you trust, that you feel good about, and the fees are fair, and that you've been recommended to them by someone that you like and trust and thinks doing things right, and I think you'll be just fine. And remember, this isn't a marriage. It's not like you're signing in blood that you have to be together forever. If you, you know, are with this person for a while and it's just not working out, then, hey, you have that conversation. Hey, I think I'm going to have to move on. So that's how you do it, folks. All right, let's take a quick break. I'll be back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Two or three really quick things. One, David McKnight, the author of The Power of Zero, he told me to tell everyone he's very excited to announce his partnership with the award-winning filmmaker Doug Orchard to create a documentary called The Power of Zero, to be released in late June of 2018. So much like his best-selling book of the same title, the movie will explore the implications of our nation's spiraling debt, unfunded obligations, and the impending freight chain of higher taxes. So it'll be great. And then also, don't forget, Wednesday night is the big Bob Knight event of Evening with Coach Knight. $25. Go to bhssknight.eventbrite.com, bhssknight.eventbrite.com, and you can order your tickets, $25. All the proceeds, 100%, benefit student groups and teacher groups over at Bloomington High School South. All right, just like always, folks, always bring more material than I have time for, but that's why we have next week. It'll be the first week of March, so we'll have a lot, I'm sure, on our plate to go over then. So I hope everyone has a great weekend. We'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye. The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.